the guy who drives it through.
We had the high notes on the park, that's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Men's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again, and Motherwell are back in front.
It's not a choice anymore, you know. We're going to have to be much more effective in the transfer market, and everybody in the club knows that now.
Ljubicic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with him. Ljubicic! Oh, wow! Lukas Ljubicic!
Thick or thin, no matter what happens, we're privileged to be part of this club.
And here they come again, Rangers stretched, it's Arnott again, Fiswich committing himself, and he scored! It's 3-0 to Motherwell!
Yeah, obviously, being on the podcast is everything I dreamed of.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Hello and welcome to the By The Minute MFC podcast. Today the guys are delighted to welcome the acting head of Supporters Direct, Andrew Jenkin. Andrew, thanks very much for agreeing to come on, it's much appreciated.
No problem at all, thanks for having me.
Well, another chance missed at the weekend, a 1-1 draw with Ross County. Jay, it was a very frustrating afternoon. A lack of urgency that's kind of cursed us all season continued to play a part, and you would now think that the playoffs beckon.
Yeah, it was a disappointing game, but of course I think you've got to remember that when you're going into a game that's billed as a must-win match, and we don't win it, then you're going to be disappointed regardless of how the actual game played out. I just felt a little flat, not just on the park, but off the park. There wasn't really much of an atmosphere. I don't think the mentality was as bad as it's been. The last couple of weeks we've been terrible. In fact, I said last week the fact that our biggest problem was that we kept starting brightly against Partick Thistle and against Accies. And if we didn't score in those opening stages, then we just seemed to fold. Luckily, we did score on Saturday, and I think you saw a bit of a difference after that. I thought we were... You know, there wasn't the same level of, you know, not being interested and lack of motivation and that kind of thing. There was a little bit more fight, I thought. But overall, it wasn't enough to get the 3 points, and that's disappointing. And now we go to the next must-win game on Friday, because it just seems as though every single game is our last chance, and then we get another one.
Yeah, Buster, it's quite incredible that we've almost got a fourth last chance against Kilmarnock on Friday night. Results are going horrendously badly for them. We should be quite confident going into that game, despite the fact we're in poor form ourselves.
You would think so, yeah. As you said, you know, I said the tease on Saturday as well. It's amazing how many chances we are getting here. You know, it's as if, you know, some sort of upper echelon being, you know, trying to give us these chances, but we're just not getting any. We're just not putting it, you know, getting the results for ourselves. As Jay says, you know, we started brightly. It was going okay. It was a great move for our goal. I agree with him. There was just something was a bit flat. You know, there was, especially in the stands as well. Actually, as he says, you know, there was no atmosphere. There didn't seem to be anybody sort of, you know, pushing for it or anything on the park either. I don't know. Really, it was a strange one.
Andrew, is someone that involved in Scottish football, the introduction of the playoffs have caused some excitement for both the fans and kind of ended season with the split and everything else. It's a different dimension, isn't it? Do you believe that the playoffs are a good thing for Scottish football?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that they add something new to it, and as you say there, it can be really exciting. And I think that's across the UK. You look to some of the leagues in England and some of the clubs yesterday making the playoffs or not making the playoffs, and it could be really exciting. So it's good to see that Scottish football's embraced that.
It's one, Jay, that kind of suddenly will have an interest from next Saturday when Rangers play Queen of the South. It's we've got to do our own thing on the park, but I think most supporters will have one eye on the playoff games.
Yeah, I think that it would only be natural for that to happen. You know, I think it was, can't actually remember if it was, I think it was Kevin Twaddle when he was on, and we were talking about the Hearts game, that last game of the season, when, you know, were we going to get into Europe, were we not? And he said that, you know, even the players, you know, they'll give you the chat about how it's all about what they're doing, but it's only natural you look to what's going on elsewhere. So no doubt the players will be interested in that as well. But, you know, it is about what we do as well. I mean, I think, you know, just to go back to Saturday, we weren't terrible on Saturday. I think it came down to, you know, poor decision making both on and off the park. If we can get that right, get into Friday's game, you know, Kildare dropping, then we might be able to go into, you know, watch the game on Saturday, watch the playoffs, and feel a little bit more optimistic that we might actually avoid them. But you're right, it would be bizarre if there wasn't, you know, a lot of interest from Motherwell players, Motherwell fans and the players as well, because I think you'll find that they will be keeping one eye on the playoffs as well.
We'll move out the conversation along more towards the fan ownership and match day experience. With Andrew on, it would be a miss of us not to discuss these things in great length. Andrew, would you be able to give us a wee bit of background to what Supporters Direct Scotland do and your mission statement as well, please?
Absolutely. Supporters Direct was set up in the early noughties from a consultation that the Labour Party were doing, and they were a bit concerned basically that football clubs were becoming a bit too detached from their communities that they were sort of set up to serve in the first place. One of their recommendations was that there should be an organisation that sort of helps facilitate you know, structured dialogues between clubs, and that's how Supporters Direct was born, really. And since then we've set up 30 supporters trusts in Scotland. And we work with our members. We're a membership organisation, so our members effectively own us. And we try and help our trusts achieve their goals, which are sometimes or very often supporter ownership of the club. And that's something that we believe that, you know, fans are the lifeblood of the game, and they put so much time and effort and energy and of course, money into it, that they deserve something a bit more than what they often get back from it.
That's always been a very big point amongst ourselves. We've discussed the Welsh Society in great depth. It's now the case that the Welsh Society is the only show in town as far as Motherwell is concerned. The Welsh Society has to succeed for the club to have a future, basically. The problem that a lot of us have had, particularly Jay, I must say, is the relationship and the kind of understanding what a normal football supporter is to these guys that are running the society and the society board. How do you kind of try and build these bridges between the board and the football supporters?
Well, in the instance, the Welsh Society is slightly different in the way that they're set up to a lot of the other supporters' trusts in Scotland. But often, you know, the trust themselves are the vehicle, or we hope them to be the vehicle between the community and the supporters and the football club. And one person once described it, and it was perfect, I've never been able to describe it better, is that a supporters trust or a supporters group such as the Welsh Society should be the conscience of the club if the club isn't, you know, doing it on their own accord. So I think that's a really nice definition. But it is hard to sometimes bring supporters on board with what you're doing, because ultimately what you might find is that 75% of the supporter base don't care much about governance or ownership of the club. They're more interested in 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, or, you know, how the striker's performing, or the fact that the left back is looking a bit sluggish, you know. So it is hard to get those supporters on board, and often it's only been too late when it's sort of dawned on supporters that they might not have a club to support, that they get involved in vehicles such as the Welsh Society. So it's about being proactive and sort of appreciating the role that these groups play sometimes.
Can I just pick up on what Sparrow was saying there, and just what you were responding with? As he mentioned, I'm perhaps the most vocal when it comes to criticising the Welsh Society. But it is, you know, genuinely meant. It's from a good place. It's because I want it to succeed. the biggest problem I have at the moment with the Welsh society is that I think to someone from the outside looking in, and as a Welsh society member, I do feel as though I am still on the outside looking in, it just seems so business orientated, you know, almost the whole thing is obsessively business. And there's stories of people, you know, wanting to get involved and being asked for their CV. There's people, you know, wanting to give ideas across, being asked to come in and give presentations. The benefits that have been offered from the start haven't shown any real understanding of what the fans want. Even the events, you know, we've spoken before about the events that the Welsh Society do. It's things like, you know, corporate style question and answer evenings. There's no, you know, the race nights, quiz nights, and not everybody likes those things, but, you know, your stereotypical average football fan does. And all of this seems to create this kind of disconnect between the Welsh Society and the fans. And it kind of alienates people, it isolates people. If you're a 17-year-old Motherwell fan who likes going to the games, having a few beers, well, underage, I'm not suggesting underage drinking, but have a few beers, enjoy the game, and you've got this great idea. If you know, if you've heard these rumours or heard that you're expected to go and give a PowerPoint presentation at a board meeting, you're probably not going to want to do that. So my biggest problem has been the fact that it kind of almost feels as though it's being sold as this egalitarian fan ownership, everybody's equal kind of setup. But the realisation is, in fact, another board of businessmen just replacing the board of businessmen we had to begin with. And obviously, I understand that business is a massive part of it. It's the biggest part. You know, it's, you're going to buy a football club and run it. But, you know, am I, based on your experience and knowledge of fan ownership, am I just being completely naive to think that a lot more could be done to actually make it more about the fans and to stop alienating people? Or does it have to be so completely business-based?
I think you're right in your observation that, you know, the Welsh Society are quite business orientated, and I'd say they were perhaps more business orientated than some of the other supporters trusts. I think there's pros and cons to it, and it's apparently or seemingly this is the route that they've wanted to take, and I suppose it comes down to the strategy. And I have to be honest, I don't know. I know a lot of the guys involved in the Welsh Society, but I don't know too much about their strategy beyond that. I know they're good guys and they've got a plan in place, and that they are very business orientated. But I think it comes down to where you want to target to get most of your revenue, and I think that will probably be what it comes down to, in that that they've perhaps targeted a lot of businesses to try and get most of the finance to try and broker this deal that they've got. So perhaps their strategy in that sense, it wouldn't be right for me to sit here and say whether that was right or wrong. But it's an interesting way to go, and perhaps some of the other supporter groups are less business minded, but they might have different relationships with the clubs. You know, Welsh Society are in quite a unique position that they've already got this deal in place, so they have the benefit of perhaps being able to target how they're going to get that finance, rather than it being somewhat of a possibility maybe one day in the future, you know. So but it's interesting you say that, definitely.
See, when we're looking at that, I think one of the other bugbearers is the committees to serve committees type style that quite a lot of these organisations run. With Motherwell, we had the Well Trust, and then we've had also the Supporters Advisory Committee. Now the Well Society are saying they're going to form a focus group to almost serve the society. Do these things sometimes get too convoluted in their ways? And that perhaps helps them lose direction, not deliberately, of course, but it almost kind of it fails to serve its purpose because it gets too spread over various groups and everything else like that.
I think that's a very fair point, and I think that is one of the few downfalls of a system which is so sort of democratically structured. If you've got like a one member, one vote system, which a lot of these groups will have, if you've got your membership in a group like that, your say is as equal as everyone else. And I think that when you've got a democratic system like that, it wouldn't be right to have somebody running it as if it was their own. So I think that is, you know, it does slow down decision making to an extent. But if you have good leadership and a group of people that are willing to make it happen, you can implement it in that way. But you're right. I think it can be lethargic. But that's a downfall of, you know, the setup that you have, and I would rather that, I think, personally, than another system where somebody claimed that they represent me without me having an opportunity to say it.
Buster, that's been one kind of bugbear of yours, hasn't it? The fact that you don't really feel that the society speak for the whole support and the demographic of the support. But how do you see the Welsh society kind of roping you in and becoming a member in the future?
Again, you see, this is, it's kind of interesting what you said there in regards to one person, one vote, and obviously, you know, someone not saying they're the owner or whatever, because the way our cover's running at the moment is we have an owner. The Welsh Society are obviously being sort of phased in, if you want, you know, and it's the Welsh Society are supposed to then obviously take over, but at the moment we have an owner. So this is where I'm a bit lost on it, to be honest with you. I don't know how it's going to be handed over. I don't know how it's going to be possible, to be fair, because I really don't see, other than, you know, maybe, as I say, I've still to sign up. I've been saying this for a couple of months now, but I've still to sign up. I probably will sign up eventually. But, you know, other than us picking up maybe a couple of other 100 members, you know, 100 or so members, I don't see it raising any further. I don't see where the revenue is going to come from for us to be actually be able to, for the Welsh Society to be able to actually run the club. And that's where my problem comes. You know, as a football fan, you put a lot of money in anyway. So to be asked to put another so much, whatever it is, you know, whatever level you want to be in, it's on top of what you're ready to be in. It's still quite a lot of money. And I think that's a problem for a lot of people.
It is, and I think that's the same sort of issue that the guys involved in something like Rangers First or the Rangers Supporters Trust or Pars United, that they're asked for, you know, our Foundation of Hearts, even when they're asked to pay for a monthly subscription or an annual subscription fee on top of what they normally play. The cost of football is so high as it is, but I think that what you get for that is, you know, you have your opportunity to have a say in it, which is, it's like that quote Churchill, I think it was Churchill that said that, you know, democracy is the, he said something about it being a terrible system, but he hasn't found any better systems of governing something. So, you know, I think that is a price that comes with it, but certainly it is a big ask, but it comes down to how much you value that, I think, and what kind of a price you put that on that personally. So, when they have an AGM, if you've got your share in it, then that enables you to go and have a say. And if you're not happy with how things are being run, then that's perhaps a good opportunity to raise those concerns. So it does work. And so far, as Churchill says, we've not found anything better.
No, I actually do agree when, you know, Sparta says it's the only way forward. You know, I've got a few things coming up recently in the future where my money's been going at the moment, but I'm definitely going to sign up. But again, I feel as if I'm just signing up for the sake of it rather than because I'm being convinced to sign up. So I'm not exactly too sure what's what. Also, just to, as well, Andrew, you mentioned obviously you've been involved in a lot of trusts and things throughout the clubs for the early 2000s. Were you involved in the Motherwell Supporters Trust when it initially started up at all?
That was actually a bit before my time. I didn't join Supporters Direct until 2012. It was a bit before my time, the World Trust. But I know that they passed on their membership to the World Society if they wanted it within Supporters Direct. So unfortunately, I never got a chance to meet any of the guys involved in that.
No, that's fine. I was just asking them just to see what was what.
Jay, but looking at kind of frustrations, the board have said they're going to co-opt two further board members. That was announced last week.
Well, I mean, I'm not a businessman, but my understanding of, you know, co-opting people onto boards is that it's the board themselves who choose that person, which is fair enough. I mean, at the end of the day, if the board has a certain, you know, demographic or certain skills it wants to acquire, then I can understand why that's done. But for me, it's just, you know, another kind of step away from what we were kind of told at the very start. I mean, I remember going along and joining, I think it was 2012, used an overdraft to pay for my membership, because I was determined I was going to be a part of this. I was swept up in the whole enthusiasm. At the time, I remember there being conversations on Steelmen Online about, you know, how were they going to, you know, get votes, you know, because the understanding at that point, I think, for most people was that Welsh Society members were going to be voting on certain situations or certain events or certain decisions. Not everything. I'm sure the understanding wasn't the Welsh Society were going to be voting on the price of pies, but there was this kind of understanding or belief at the start that this was an exciting chance for your fan to have a say, not a proper say. And as times went on, I mean, we also had the vote on whether Rangers should be allowed back into the SPL or punted down to third division, which had great joy in voting to get them punted down to the third division. So, I mean, there was this kind of impression given that as a Welsh Society member, you'd have a vote in particular issues. And as times went on, that's been kind of lost. Now it just seems to be you'll have a vote on who gets to represent you on the board. If you actually go and read the terms and conditions on the Welsh Society website, that's what that now says. It says that as a Welsh Society member, you get a vote to decide who is on the board. So then when you go one further again, when you've got, you know, co-opted members, so, you know, there's going to be a couple of extra members on the board now who aren't voted by the Welsh Society members, as far as I'm aware. That's my understanding of co-opted members. So it's got its pros and its cons. I can understand that if they have a, you know, particular skill or whatever they need to acquire, then it suits them to co-opt board members on. But again, it goes back to this kind of the disconnect between the Welsh Society board and the average fan. The average fan, you know, where is all the excitement gone? As I said earlier, it almost feels as though it's been, you know, one model, one political model, democratic model of egalitarianism or even socialism, you know, one vote, everybody's equal, doesn't matter how much you put into it. But then on the flip side, you've got what the reality is, seems to be a lot more, you know, I don't know, contrived or elitist almost.
Can I just ask as well, in regards to the these co-opted board members, now is this board as in football club board or the Welsh Society board, and is there a difference between the two of them these days?
Well, it's just a Welsh Society board. As far as I'm aware, the system is still that the actual Motherwell board, to begin with, it will be, I think, one or two members of the Welsh Society board will be voted on to the Motherwell board, and then I think I'm right in saying that the idea was that over time the number of Welsh Society board members on the actual club board will increase till we get to a point where the entire board, you know, there's no difference between the two. That's my understanding of it.
I believe you're right, and that was probably the initial plan. But again, I think I'd have to look into it again and read it again, but is the fact that these people are just being chosen to be part of whichever board it is, maybe to do the fact that we effectively do have an owner rather than, you know, the Welsh Society being the owners?
I've got no idea.
You know, it's just a thought I was having there as you were talking about it.
Looking ahead to Friday night's game, another Friday night for us. Man, we must have had 7 or 8 Friday night games this season already. A strange one for me, Jay, given there was a real lack of enthusiasm from the supporters for what was a massive game on Saturday. How do we rejuvenate the guys ahead of what is a massive game, a must-win game, on Friday night against Kilmarnock?
Well, I agree. I thought it was a really flat atmosphere. I suppose you can kind of understand that, considering, you know, the last two games we had 1,600 Motherwell fans at Fir Hill, and then obviously the fantastic display and a packed stand behind the goal at Aki's, and we were repaid by, you know, effectively bought on it. So I can understand why, you know, maybe it was a little flatter, maybe fans kind of, I don't know, losing a little bit of faith, if you like, and it's completely understandable. We're where we should be. We're 11th, deservedly so. We've been really poor this season. As I said earlier, though, I thought that we looked a little better on Saturday. Not by a great deal, but we did create some chances. Again, it's the decision-making, both on and off the park, that was the big problem. Ross County, obviously, were happy with a draw as well, so you've got to factor that into it. So on Friday, you know, you're playing against a team that are pretty much in free fall at a terrible time of the season for them. Whereas our home record over the last month or two has actually been pretty good. So I don't think it's time to chuck in the towel completely just yet. I'm a realist in that I fully expect that we will finish 11th, but I'm also an optimist in that I don't see any reason why we can't actually win on Friday night.
Andrew, the Friday night fixtures, as I say, we've been a bit unlucky in the sense we've played away at Aberdeen twice on the television this season on a Friday night, but it seems to have worked quite well. Motherwell, Kilmarnock, about 45 minutes separating the two towns. That's the kind of fixture that will work on a Friday night.
Absolutely, it is, and we've been quite concerned with a lot of our members getting in touch to say that fixture scheduling's got a little bit out of hand, and we need a bit more common sense applied to it. But that's a good example of a case that will work for it, because good luck to you. You're gonna have a great atmosphere on your hands on Friday night, and I think it will be good for neutrals as well to be able to watch it. And that's a good example of TV and common sense being able to combine, and not where supporters aren't losing out. So yeah, good luck. It should be a good game.
It's kind of a bugbear of mine that we do have so many changes, sometimes at quite short notice. The one that's got to me is the Partick Thistle game, which could potentially be a season defining game. Will either be played on the Friday or the Saturday. It doesn't really give supporters much time to schedule plans, rearrange work shifts, etc.
That's kind of farcical, to be honest with you, that they're saying it could be here or there. So, as you say, what is the actual? I mean, are they just waiting to find out how the league's looking? If the game's useless, stick it on Saturday at 3 o'clock. If not, put it on a telly on a Friday.
Well, I think that is the case. Remember last season, Hibs played Kilmarnock at Easter Road in the deciding game to see which team would play in the playoff, and Hibs refused BT Sport access to Easter Road. They didn't allow them to show it on the television. I take it that BT Sport have made kind of precautions to avoid that scenario happening again.
I remember that actually now you mention it, yeah. Even the fixtures in general, as you say, we have been quite unlucky that we've been sent to Aberdeen twice on a Friday night. There's been cases of Highland teams having to come down on a Sunday, where the first train gets them into Glasgow 10 minutes after kickoff and things like that. So it's one of the things that the TV companies, the SPFL or the SFA, whether it's in the Cup, and maybe even ScotRail and things like, they all need to work together, see if it's something which, if they are going to have games at daft times, make sure there's transport available. The whole sort of waiting until the last minute in regards to their game against Partick Thistle, that's just completely ludicrous. But it's, what do you expect for the people that run our game?
Yeah, it's a contentious issue. Another contentious issue, Andrew, I would like to get your opinion on this first. The Cambridge United supporters being breathalysed on the way into their game at the weekend against Burton Albion. Beer at the football has been a big talking point among Scottish football supporters. Many of us can't see any rhyme or reason why football supporters can't be trusted to have a pint at the game. This is taking it to a whole new level though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Interestingly, I mean, the difference in England and Scotland being that you can have a drink in the stadium in England, whereas you're prohibited from doing that in Scotland, which is ludicrous, if you ask me. Just treats fans with, just treats them very poorly, in my opinion. And it's something that we've been quite keen at promoting supporters' views and opinions on. And I did quite a lot of research on this last year, looking in supporters' perceptions of the ban, because whilst a lot of us might be quite in favour of lifting the restrictions, there are some that are against it. And when you look at the data of who's most against it, it's quite interesting to break it down and look at those sort of segments and demographics. It comes quite interesting, but absolutely, this is sort of what's happening. What happened to the Cambridge fans is a whole new level. And I think if you're going to treat supporters with as little trust as that, then it's a worrying state of the game, really.
Would you say that it's a further blow to plans to reintroduce alcohol at Scottish football stadiums? Do you think that'll be another thing that sets things back?
Well, it'll be interesting, and I think, like you say, we were doing quite a lot of research on this, and if you look at a lot of other legislation, is trying to prohibit excessive drinking. So if different laws are trying to close it down further, so it'll be interesting if they do reverse this legislation and lift the ban in Scotland. But then again, it is almost subjecting football supporters specifically, because rugby fans can of course enjoy a drink. So it will be really interesting to see whether or not they make a decision on it.
But just to move things along again, a big talking point revolving around the podcast, more national media exposure for us, I suppose, in the sense that our Player of the Year award, or what it was referred to in The Sun as a snub, made The Sun newspaper. Dominic Thomas received their Under-20s Player of the Year award on Saturday. Jay, the club are fantastic in putting us up and allowing us to present the award. Patterson Trophy Supplies donating a fantastic prize for the award for Dominic. It was a nice moment to see how much it meant to him. Just wish it was under slightly better circumstances.
Yeah, I think it's worth pointing out that it was an Under-20s Player of the Year award that we decided on in the end. I noticed on Steelman Online there was a little bit of confusion. I think possibly because of the actual article on the Sun website. I don't think really made it completely clear that that was the case. I think when we did the Player of the Year, it became pretty obvious pretty quickly that, people were taking, it was quite a laboured process, it was quite a soul-destroying process. There was a lot of, if I have to choose, then, I might as well go with. And, that's not really how you should be picking your Player of the Year. I said it last week. There's so many awards in football these days. How often are they actually earned? Your Player of the Year should be the player that earns it, not just the least worst of your team. So I was happy to go along with Under-20s award, because as we said, it's shining a light on what has been a good season for Under-20s. And you're right, it was quite clear when Dom got his award, he was very grateful. He seemed very genuine in that. And he also seems like a good lad with a good head screwed on his shoulders, which is obviously, good stuff for us going forward. But yeah, it was great to see that he actually seemed to be genuinely appreciative of it. And I think we made the right decision in the end.
But it was a nice experience getting to present the award, and also catching up with Brian Martin, a real first for you.
Hi. It was nice when he came over and you're like, oh, how you doing, blah, blah. And I'm like, all right, I'm the guy that didn't turn up, and then the guy that didn't speak the second time you were there. So it was nice to actually have a word with him. But as Jay says, we never really said much to Dom, but he did seem really appreciative of the fact that, we thought he'd earned that. I pointed out to you as well that on his Instagram account, he'd put up a wee photo of it as well, so he does seem chuffed with it, so it's pleasing to see.
Yeah, I think we've stressed it in the past. We put up a wee statement last week. We're not negative supporters. We still continue to go regardless and get right behind the team. The fact of the matter is, though, that this season, not one player in the first team has been good enough. I think it's a harsh but fair assessment of performances this season, and it would have been quite embarrassing for all parties if we had to go along and present to a first team player. We basically wouldn't have deserved it, so it would be very, very awkward.
Exactly, aye. That was the thought behind the whole process when we decided we were going to award this. First of all, just a sort of Player of the Year. I wasn't sure who should be picked. Who's earned it? And then at Hamilton, I turned and I said to Jay, have we started is this in motion yet? We weren't sure, we asked you, and at that point we decided, let's leave it just now, have a think about it. And it wasn't until you until you were going to another under-20s game and you and Jay came up with that suggestion, I thought, brilliant, fair dues, go ahead with it.
Yeah, Jay, it was a... It's been a difficult season to be a Motherwell supporter, given the drastic change from second and clinching that at Pittodrie with the final kick of the ball to where we are just now, three games to go and looking almost certainties for that relegation playoff.
Yeah, but it was always going to happen. I mean, you know, even when we had Andrew Wilson on and we discussed, you know, even the budgeting, you know, the whole conversation was the fact that we couldn't budget. Is one season things were going to go wrong and we're going to find ourselves in difficulties, and that's exactly what happened. You know, obviously football fans have got short memories, that's what happens. But, you know, we've got to remember that we are a bit of a yo-yo club. I'm not going to use the terrible roller coaster pattern, but we are a bit of an up-and-down club. One season we might be challenging for Europe, the next we'll be bottom six. That's you know, where our club tends to be, and we've been really, really lucky over a good few years now where we've been you know, finishing regularly. And who knows, you know, finishes like that may be just around the corner again. But for this season, you know, we need to just get on with it. We're still all Motherwell supporters. We've still got a chance of staying up, whether it is via the playoffs or 10th position. So as realistically as I do agree that, you know, 11th place is almost certain, you know, there's no need to chuck in the towel just yet.
Yeah, that's the thing, Andrew. I think regardless of results, and despite the kind of fickle nature of football supporters, they tend to be quite a loyal bunch when the chips are down.
Sorry. Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, we always say that supporters are the best person to be involved in the governance of a club, because the players can change, the managers can change, the chairman can change, but the supporters are always going to be there. And they're the best people. They've got the best intentions of the club. Got the best will of the club, and they'll always be there for the club. And often, if you know, if it comes down to it, they'll put their neck out on a line and keep it afloat if need be. So, yeah, absolutely, supporters. It's like you were talking about the horrible cliche of the roller coaster, but that cliche of supporters are the lifeblood of the game, and it's just absolutely fact, and you can't really argue otherwise. I don't feel.
Just to finish up for this week, a big talking point has been the club's desire to not charge season ticket holders for this playoff game or potential playoff game. Motherwell have been very vocal in the fact that they will not be charging season ticket holders, despite the league organisers saying that they don't change the rules. Buster, for me this is a bizarre one. I would say it's technically a league game, it's not a cup game or anything else, so surely season ticket holders should have free entry to a game like this.
As you say, it is bizarre. Because of my work situation, I don't actually have a season ticket at the moment. You know, I pay at the gate, as you know. So I'll be paying anyway. But if, you know, if I had shelled out on my season ticket, you know, I would maybe be expecting it to be on there. And as you say, a couple of clubs are thinking that as well. I thought I read somewhere that, you know, the SPFL have decided that No matter what happens, they have to charge us to get in. There's a minimum of £15 or something. Was that true, or did I dream that?
Oh, a minimum entry £15. Yeah, that's stipulated in the bizarre Scottish football rulebook.
See, I mean, again, what's the punishment going to be if they decide to let the season ticket holders in? And are they going to just try and, you know, fine them a couple of £1,000 or something, £20,000 or something like that? Make up their money. What's the actual issue here behind, you know, the gate receipts anyway? Is some of this go to the SPFL? Like,
I'm not entirely sure. Andrew, do you know any more than that?
I don't actually, to be completely honest, but I have a feeling it's something to do with, I think the SPFL get a percentage of it, so that so they have a vested interest in it. That's my understanding. I might be wrong, but that's my understanding.
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, 50%. I think it's 50% of the gate receipts go to the SPFL, and a certain percentage of that, I'm not sure whether it's all of it or but at least a certain percentage of that is then, as far as I'm aware, distributed amongst all SPFL clubs, or at least the lower league clubs. I think that was one sort of measure put in place so that the clubs in the, you know, first, second and third division would get a little bit of money, a little bit of revenue from the introduction of the playoffs. In terms of whether we should be allowed to give season ticket holders free entry or not, I'm torn on it. Obviously, as a season ticket holder, I would love to get in for nothing, and I think that that should be part of your season ticket. You know, the clue is in the name. It's a ticket for the season, and the playoffs are quite clearly still part of that season. However, if this is something that Motherwell have voted on, which I presume we have done, because it's been, you know, the SPFL are the clubs, it's the clubs who make up the rules. If we voted on it at a time when we didn't expect that it was going to come back to haunt us, and now we're changing our tune simply because we're in that situation, then, you know, I'm a little uncomfortable with that. But obviously we don't really know the ins and outs, but, you know, that's the way it comes across, you know, because it's obviously been put in action or made a rule when the clubs have voted on it. And if we voted for it because we didn't expect it was going to affect us, then, you know, it's a bit hypocritical to then turn around and make a big show and dance about flaunting the rules when we do find ourselves in that situation.
Yeah, but the sheer hypocrisy of the governing body frustrates me as well. You've got Hibs didn't charge for their game against Hamilton Accies last season. You've had all the nonsense following the handball of Josh Meekins in the Scottish Cup semi-final. They say that the rule book can't just be disregarded here, there and everywhere, but they seem to just change their minds and make up the rules as they go along at times.
Oh, no,
there's something absolutely solid there.
Oh yeah, don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm not for a second suggesting that people who run our game are anything other than totally inept. We know that. That is a matter of fact. That is absolute shambles at times. In terms of the Hibs thing, there was I think it was the Alloa chairman was on the radio after the game on Saturday. I'm not sure when it was, but he was on the radio when I was in the car at some point, and he was he suggested that one of the reasons that Hibs, he actually said that there were a few unknowns, a few sort of behind the scenes reasons that Hibs were allowed to do it. But one of the main reasons he actually gave was the fact that apparently, and I don't know if there's any truth to this, but this is what the Alloa chairman said, was that Hibernian issued their season tickets in good faith to their fans before the rule was implemented, that they weren't then allowed to use them for the playoff games. So, again, I don't know how much truth there is in that, but the Alloa chairman's point was that when Hibs fans bought season tickets at the start of the season, it was under the impression and good faith that they would be allowed to use them at the end of the season, whereas from this season onwards, there has been no such, you know, confusion. It has been set in stone that you can't use them for those games. And as I said, as inept as those who run our game are, I still have a slight problem if we have, you know, backed this when we weren't in the situation, but now we're in it, we're suddenly, you know, changing our tune. That's slightly uncomfortable.
I think, though, at a time when you're approaching the summer holidays and everything else, there's people got a lot of commitments on financially. People that can't afford an extra £15 or an extra day out, they'll maybe perhaps have to give up going to the away playoff leg if it comes to it. Really now, supporters that have followed the club loyally over the course of a disappointing season seems baffling to me. I don't know why this rule's in place. There's all six playoff games are on BT Sport, so you've got the television money coming in there. It seems very, very unfair.
Oh no, I agree. I mean, I'm not disagreeing that you know, season ticket holders should be allowed in for the playoff games. I think they should. I think, as I said before, it's a season ticket. Just because your season's extended a few games because, you know, you're either 11th or in, you know, second, third or fourth in the first division, that shouldn't change that. That's still part of your season. But, you know, my issue is, you know, teams changing their tune because they're no longer there. I mean, that was actually hinted at by the Alloa chairman, the idea that a club like Rangers, who voted for it first time around, probably thought they were just going to run away with the league and wouldn't need to bother about it. Like, similarly, you know, if you apply that logic to ourselves, did we vote for it when we thought, ah, well, we're second, we don't need to bother, and suddenly we're in 11th and we're going, oh, well, wait a minute, we don't want to give you that money. You know, these are the things that should have been thought about at the time. You're right, you know, fans should be allowed in. At the end of an expensive season, whether you're a season ticket holder or not, you spent a lot of money all season, and you don't want to be spending extra to go to games at the end of the season. So you're right. You're completely correct, but the clubs have decided this at some point, and that's my issue. You know, I think we need to remember that yes, those who run our game are terrible at it. You know, especially the likes of Neil Doncaster, Stuart Reagan, these kind of guys should have been out of their jobs ages ago. The fact they're still there is a disgrace. But there are certain issues that, you know, that our club will have had a say in, and other clubs will have had a say in. And it is a little bit, you know, there's hypocrisy there when the tune changes because circumstances have changed for us personally.
Buster, is this a bit of the shots taken this that... I'll go and mention his name. Andrew Wilson came on the podcast and said we didn't want to be another St Mirren. St Mirren, having won a cup a few years ago, been a regular in the SPL, they've got a new stadium, they've got no bank debt. Have we been short? Excited and are planning for the future?
I think that was a bit obvious. Again, when we were talking to people and they were, you know, we were talking about budgets and things like that, you know, we were obviously planning, or at least hoping, you know, we'd finish top six, have a cup run every year. That never came about, obviously, at all under McCall, other than that, you know, when he first came in and we got to the Scottish Cup final. But, you know, this sort of did we not vote for it thing, you know, I don't know. I obviously can't comment because it's, you know, it's a bit, it's all speculation really, isn't it? But, you know, if that's the rules, you know, then again, you might be getting, you know, shortchanged as a fan, but, you know, the clubs then can't turn around and start arguing it just because. I mean, like Rangers, for example, my mate who supports Rangers, he said to me, nobody's going to pay to go to that. That's why we're obviously, you know, trying to get their season ticket holders involved, because there's nobody going to shell out £20, you know, maybe another three times for them. So that's obviously why they're wanting their season tickets involved. You know, is it the same for us as well? Who knows?
It's a dangerous standoff, isn't it, Andrew, in terms of you've got five teams involved in these playoffs. The last thing that the organisers want is a boycott, obviously.
Yeah, of course, absolutely. And I think the only other people that lose out are the supporters themselves. So you've got to be careful to make sure that supporters aren't shortchanged by it all, really. But yeah, absolutely. But either way, it should be a very interesting playoff.
I very much hope that we don't have that much interest in it, but we'll have to wait and see. Andrew, thanks very much for your time tonight. It's been much appreciated and it's been very, very interesting.
Thank you very much for having me and good luck on Friday night.
Thanks very much.
Chandra.
Jay, Buster, we'll be back next Monday.
Hi.
I'm in Cyprus, but I'll see how drunk I am and if I can get a Wi-Fi signal, to be honest with you. I'm more than willing to try and get involved. I'll be watching the game on Friday on telly. I'll be there with probably about 10 Celtic fans and about 30 Rangers fans, but I've convinced some of them that we're going to watch the football, so why?
Well, there you go, folks. Next Monday promises to be an absolute shambles. You've been listening to the By the Minute MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thanks and goodbye. Got nothing to say. I